In victory or defeat, true fans never quit. Champions are made by the fans. That's why 5-Hour Energy is adding a new limited edition Stand the Fan 5-Hour Energy Shot to their roster. Fuel your team's spirit with a taste as sweet as an overtime win. Packed with an all-star lineup of B vitamins, nutrients, and 230 milligrams of caffeine, it keeps you feeling energized, loud, and proud all game long. Check out 5hourenergy.com to grab your Stand the Fan Shot today.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details. It's better
over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Wake up!
Wake up!
Mike Mulligan, David Haw.
Of everything the Bears did, they fell on their face.
They fell on their face.
They fell on their face.
They slipped.
They did a Jalen Johnson.
I'm falling. I can't get up.
God.
And they keep piling up, Mully.
And it's lost just 4 in a row, 2 in as horrific a fashion as humanly possible. What does that say going into a Vikings game?
Tough times don't last, but tough people do.
I think it means it's trouble. They come in here and they're going to feel like they can move the ball against the Bears defense. And they're going to feel like they can attack that Bears offensive line and rattle.
You think Brian Flores is sitting there crowing about how well they played yesterday?
Yeah, again, I get the question.
He's not losing any sleep about a team that scored 19 points.
He's going to be studying every moment of every tape and figuring out. I'm just saying.
He's going to be reading the Thomas Brown affair.
Yeah, exactly.
We're going to fight to the end.
Start your mornings with Mully and Haw, 5:30 till 10 a.m. on 670 The Score.
Let's go.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. David, you know this, but we should let everyone know you're listening to a Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, Plumbing, and Electric Football Friday, presented by your local Ford dealers and IDOT. It's not a game. Illinois.com.
Morning, Mully. Yeah, we made it to Friday. It is going to be a more peaceful day around the city today. A little bit more
relaxed
in terms of getting places.
Did the city learn that snow comes and you ought to be prepared?
First one's always tough.
First one's always tough. What is it? Like you forgot to check the battery on the snowplow?
You get lulled into a sense of security. It's understandable. Get the first one out of the way.
Barely understandable.
Yeah, it was a difficult
day
getting
around. What happened to Jane Byrne? What happened to her?
Well,
snow,
where'd she go?
Snow will fell a mayor.
I was a little surprised. I will say that how much snow was on the roads after our show yesterday, after a little workout here.
We were in the midst of an actual snowstorm, and it was like I was on Lakeshore Drive, impassable. That's impossible.
In the grips. I like to say in the grips.
Oh, it was
rather
really,
than in the midst.
Well,
in the grips sounds more
the grips.
Menacing.
I like that.
Right?
Yeah, that bloody snowstorm had us by the throat for about
an
hour.
Yes, it did. Please, but we persevered. Please. And today, a little bit more mild.
Speak for yourself.
The weekend.
I did not persevere.
Okay,
I muttered swear words.
Oh, wow. You too.
I got my language went foul.
But what's different from any other day when you're driving?
That's a good point.
You know,
it's a fair point.
It goes with the territory.
That's true.
Made it through Thursday. Big weekend ahead. Big night last night at the United Center. I have to say that. Speaking of just winter weather, winter feel, I never really thought, seriously, the Hawks were going to beat the defending Stanley Cup champions, especially on a night when Connor Bedard does not have a shot on goal. And yet, they beat the Panthers.
Isn't that most nights anymore? Is that 11 in a row?
Stop.
Give me the yo. Holy cow.
Don't jump off the bandwagon yet.
I'm not off the
bandwagon. Way too early.
I already said.
Way too early.
Shelly went 40 games. He was a defender. When he gets to 40, I'll get worried.
He won't get to 40.
You sure?
I'm pretty sure. That line played pretty responsible.
Did you think
defensively?
Think it would get to 11?
No, I did not think it'd get to 11.
Okay.
Missing the point. The point is the Hawks won. They beat the Panthers.
I'm aware.
Mrazek was terrific in net. The Panthers came in thinking the Hawks were going to be like one of the worst teams in the league. Took them for granted. Looked ahead. Shame on them. But good for the Hawks. Big night at the UC.
Yeah, congratulations to the Blackhawks on a nice victory. I wish they would help their young star, whatever way possible, whatever that means.
He played on the wing again. Jason Dickinson was centering that line. Mm-hmm. I don't really like that experiment. It feels experimental, but he's got to get going. They'll keep him out of the face-off circle, so that's one of the reasons why, but nonetheless. They win.
They're at the Flyers on
They go to Philadelphia Saturday. So I didn't see as much of the snow game on Thursday Night Football as I typically would watch a Thursday Night Football game. I stayed for a lot of the Hawks game, but I think I missed a pretty good one.
Well, this is not Aloha Stadium, by the way, in case you're wondering. 2nd and 6.
This is AFC North football, baby.
It is.
It's Ohio weather, baby. I love it.
Yes, baby.
Kirk Herbstreit leaning into it.
He was, baby.
So was Jameis Winston.
Yeah, he was very happy to play in snow.
He played
that fourth quarter. It really was like it was a whole paradigm shift. Like, we were playing so well offensively, and then bang bang, back to back drives with turnovers, and I'm just like, oh my gosh, like, this is really an NFL's film moment. The snow starts pouring down. It starts getting like my feet started getting heavy because I'm squishing through the snow. And it was so great to end up getting that win.
It seemed like he had fun.
Nothing like Jameis Winston talking about a paradigm shift.
I think the squishing in the snow was the highlight.
Do you think so? That guy, is he going to end up in a studio after he's done?
He's very entertaining. Yeah.
When did that happen?
And it was a snow glow game. A snow globe game. It did become kind of a thing where you're like, wow, it's really coming down.
Mm-hmm.
And it was starting to stick, and it was fun.
So a 3-8 team beats an 8-3 team. That's hopeful for the team that is overmatched on Sunday at Soldier Field.
See, I'm going to argue with you on that one.
Okay, I'm ready.
They might not be overmatched. They might be as good as the Vikings. They just don't
know how to show it. Let me rephrase that.
Overcoached?
It's encouraging for the team that is not expected to win Sunday at Soldier Field.
Yeah, but they're 3.5-point dogs. It's not like they're... But
they're still not expected to win.
No.
It's factually correct statement.
Okay, I'm sorry.
But
you go, girl.
I'm just saying, the team that you didn't think was going to win last night won.
And that's the NFL.
It's the NFL. Good reminder. Right? It's a good reminder.
I mean, this Pittsburgh statistic that's out there is just an absurdity, but it's apparently real.
The Thursday night on the road against AFC North opponents, they're winless under Mike Tomlin.
How is that possible?
Didn't think that was possible.
I mean, it's,
it implies it's, that they're not prepared, which is ridiculous because they're always prepared.
But if that's his only weakness, that's a pretty good one.
Yeah, I think so.
But, man, that's I don't think the weather had anything to do with it. I believe if you watch the game, they were ahead late. So it's a mystery.
But the weather had
– that's in a box.
The weather had to have had something to do with it.
Sure.
The weather dictated a lot of that game. Browns get a victory. Nick Chubb. Winston, they did what they needed to do. Congrats. That's probably the highlight of their season.
You know, I got to tell you, it was a pretty bad season. It's been a bad season for the Browns, but that was a good game for them. And it's kind of, when you're looking at the NFL these days, there are teams that are capable of surprising other teams. And I think the Bears, I know they got their work cut out for them, but maybe they're capable of surprising the Vikings.
They definitely are capable.
It's hard to lose 5 in a row, David.
Yeah, well.
You need to make some real blunders.
They have done it before, though, not that far long ago.
Very true.
But they are capable of beating the Vikings, just like they were capable of beating the Packers. They have not been overmatched. That's what makes this so frustrating. The Bears have a roster that is better than 4-6, and they have been in many 22, I believe, one-score games and outcomes under Matt Eberflus in three seasons.
Tevin Jenkins, full participant in practice. Mm-hmm. He's back, baby. We don't know for how long, but he is back.
5-17 in those games, though, as I finished that one. Tevin Jenkins is back.
DeAndre Swift, limited, but back in a limited capacity. Isn't that necessary on a Thursday, and now it's Friday, mm-hmm. and you're heading towards Sunday? You need your running back.
Right.
So
he missed a day of practice.
Yeah.
As they said, he's rested, had a groin situation. But he's probably going to play. The Vikings run defense best in the NFL. You need both those running backs.
Yes.
Need a little balance, and having him back certainly will help matters.
Yeah, I saw your guy Ovechkin broke a leg, huh? I thought that was meant for good luck, but apparently he's going to be out for a while. A left fibula fracture, and he's not breaking Gretzky's record anytime soon.
Well, he's out 4 to 6 weeks. He probably won't do that this year then. He is 39 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So his healing power or his recovery rate might be slower than it was when he was obviously a younger man. But with Ovechkin, I never know what to expect. I did not think that he would be leading the NHL
in
goals at 15 this early in the season. So I think it's bad for hockey, the fact that he's missing out for the next 6 weeks. And I think, obviously, it's good for people to want Gretzky's record preserved. But it was beginning to be fun to follow. How many goals would he get game to game, and would he score tonight? He was doing it very much like he has done it throughout his career. And I thought he was done. But no, I think that when he comes back, what's he got, 28 to go?
28 to tie it.
Be tough to do this year. Especially right. Coming back injured and getting back into the swing of things.
How many years he got?
I thought this might have been it. So if he's within striking distance, so I could see him coming back just to get it next year. The Caps, depending on how good of a team he'll be returning to. Not sure, but that was unfortunate. I know Ovechkin's not the most popular guy. He is fun to watch as a hockey player, though.
But how can something be bad for hockey when it's good for Gretzky? Aren't they synonymous?
Well, you can be fans of Wayne Gretzky and still like the watch the chase or the pursuit of somebody breaking his record. I don't know that I don't think it's either or. Are you happy he's injured?
I wouldn't say I'm happy he's injured, but I just don't want to get into politics.
I never did.
I thought you brought up Putin.
I did not.
I thought you mentioned Putin.
Okay, let's move on.
Didn't you say Putin's puppet?
Let's move on.
Did I misunderstand?
Yeah, you did.
Oh, no, we were talking about... Oh.
No, you brought up Ovechkin.
I'm sorry. I did bring it up.
Yeah.
And you said it was bad for hockey. Okay. Yeah, let's move on. There are some big football games coming up, buddy. There's a big Bulls game tonight, NBA Cup. High time they win a game on that red floor. That's a big deal. But really, it's about college football. That Indiana-Ohio State game is the eyes of the nation will be upon it. And this will be a real watershed moment, I think, for Indiana. I expect them to be ready to go.
Well,
I expect the quarterback.
It'll be competitive. The quarterback's going to play. I mm-hmm. think Indiana will still find the going very tough against Ohio State because of the depth, some of the other realities. And the danger when you have these great seasons like Indiana's put together, they're unbeaten, they're a top five team, and it is one of those can-you-believe-it type of years. Kurt Cignetti has maximized the talent on that roster and taken advantage of the situation. He's got an 8-year contract now. I think this all setting up to have a 2-touchdown loss and everybody wondering about the legitimacy of their season, which I hate, because I think that it's going to be more likely the outcome that they're going to fall short. I would love to see them upset Ohio State. I would love to see them competitive down to the final possession. More likely, as we see often in college sports, you're going to see them beaten and not measure up, a tough venue on the road, and then people will start to wonder about every one of their victories, even though every one of their victories has been decisive. So that's what I think we're looking at. The conversation will steer in that direction. But I still think that they deserve to be in the top 12.
I'm not arguing with you about that. I just wonder, is there, like when you say they are favored, Ohio State is favored by 13.5 points. That's basically two touchdowns. So if they cover the two touchdowns, they're in good shape. What would the number be where they're in bad shape? Like, would it take like a 54-6 score?
If they get beaten 34-10, people are going to start to wonder if they belong in the 12-team playoff.
So it's more than three touchdowns.
I think probably.
Okay.
If it's 20 or more, then there's going to be some outrage if Indiana makes the 12-team playoff, even though with one loss and the only loss to Ohio State, you could make that claim. If it's more than 20 points, people are going to doubt their legitimacy and whether they belong. That's just that's the kind of conversations and arguments we're used to having in college football, whether it's a 4-team or 12-team playoff, or whether it's, you know, the good old days when it was according to the AP poll. But Indiana needs to compete and stay within single digits. If it were a one-score game, it's a different conversation on Monday.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, I mean, you're right. And I think it's a weird thing to say, but we've learned in college football over the years that style points matter. They just do. And that's the way the committee members will look at it. That's the way all the national rankings will look at it. It's just, it doesn't matter if you're on the road or if you're, you know, supposed to lose by 13.5 points. If it gets over 17, 21, then all of a sudden you're a bum and you never should have gotten a shot. And meanwhile, Notre Dame is also playing an undefeated team, which is very interesting. Army is, I believe, 18th in the country in the AP poll. We know the Irish have taken care of business since losing their loss to Northern Illinois, a home loss to Northern Illinois. Are you going to be keeping a close eye on the Army game, or do you think that, you know, whenever you're talking about kind of the service schools, it's very difficult for them to compete?
I will be surprised if that's a close game. It shouldn't be, just because of the, with due respect to Army, I don't think Notre Dame physically should be matching up with Army. They should be well coached enough to play the disciplined style of defense you're going to have to play to stop Army's option attack and quarterback, who's a great athlete. That Notre Dame defense is up to the task. So the Army game.
Do you like watching option football?
I love watching option football.
Especially because it's so rare these days, right?
Army and Navy and maybe a couple other teams
It's fun because it's a different type of football. You get to see stuff you don't normally see.
Yeah, you definitely do. And that's the football that I learned growing up. And I love the responsibilities. And I love the way that you can see teams who are lesser athletes and not as physical as other teams beat them just by outnumbering them. Notre Dame can't fall into that trap. I think that game won't be as close as Indiana, Ohio State. Of the two games on Saturday, Notre Dame and Army should be a wider margin of victory for the Irish than Ohio State should have against Indiana.
That's interesting because Notre Dame is favored by 14. It's really a half a point difference between the two lines, but I think you're probably correct.
I think Indiana is better equipped to keep the game close than Army is against Notre Dame. Indiana has a better chance of keeping Ohio State within reach than Army does of Notre Dame, even as though it's at New York. It might feel like a home game for Notre Dame, just because of all the fans that will flock to go there. Right. I know some people going from Chicago just to follow Notre Dame.
That's at Yankee Stadium,
Yankee Stadium, yeah.
That's super cool. We have been fortunate enough to see a hockey game at Yankee Stadium.
That was a cool event, yeah.
It's cool. It's just cool. It's the building's cool. And
Winter Classic Yankee Stadium.
It's cool.
So it's a good place for a football game as well. Army, you know, the thing about option football is that you can reduce the game by controlling the ball and eating the clock, and you can avoid the kind of things. The problem isn't typically offensively. The problem can come up defensively, where you often see the mismatches or just the athleticism and the gap between the type of athlete the Army has on its roster and the type of athlete that Notre Dame does.
The Notre Dame quarterback, you never know. You just never know week to week.
Riley Leonard is a tremendous runner.
He's a great runner of the ball.
Really resourceful guy with the football under his arm. But throwing it's a different story. Yeah. He hasn't had the touch on the deep ball, and I don't think that he has been the passer maybe they thought he could be. But he's a competitor. He's
good
a leader.
Player.
He's a very good player.
It's just you just don't know what you're getting week to week. You just don't know. Like I've watched them some weeks, and it's like, wow, he's good today. I've watched them other weeks where you're like, oh.
Their defense travels well, though, and that gives them an opportunity to kind of wait until he gets going. They've got some really good running backs, and they've got a Notre Dame offensive line that has kind of rounded into shape. And in this 8-game win streak, they're scoring 42 points a game. So it seems kind of silly to quibble over the quarterback, even though I think he has not looked like a polished passer at times. And that keeps them from starting as fast as sometimes they should start. They're going to run the ball probably all over Army, though.
What do you think about unanimous MVPs in baseball? Any surprise? I think we all knew who the MVPs were, and it ended up being just, I guess the amazing thing to me remains that Shohei Ohtani, a full-time DH, is the MVP of the National League, and here's a guy who this is his rehab year, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is the year where he just needs to get better so he can get back to doing the things he does best.
50-50 though.
Well, it's just insane.
It's insane.
Yeah.
And Aaron Judge doing what he did. These are two historic figures in baseball.
Yep.
Maybe the guy that by the time he's done, Ohtani's going to be referred to as the best who ever did it.
Yeah.
And Aaron Judge is going to make his own mark. And it's a fascinating time in baseball right now because of these two guys and the type of season that Ohtani put together. I wonder if I were the Dodgers and he still can pitch.
Would you even bother with it?
Would you bother with it? If it takes away from his everyday approach at the plate, if you think it might cut into his offensive production, I wouldn't mess with it. You're dealing with somebody who's as close to perfect offensively as you're going to get, and I just don't know that you would mess around with that. Get your outfielder, fill your hole in your roster if you think you have one. You're the defending World Series champions, and until you need Ohtani.
Do you think they have one? Here's the thing about them. It feels like they're going to try to win as many World Series as possible while they have Ohtani. It's a different feeling than you get from every other team in baseball.
Mm-hmm.
So I would imagine they're going to try to get the most out of everything they have. And I mean, they could. Like, I'm not predicting they will, and I don't even know. But they could sign anyone they want.
And they might get Soto because of that reality.
Yes.
Yeah, they have the best TV deal in baseball. They could absorb his contract because they're paying Ohtani kind of they circumvented the system. Yeah. And, $2 million next year. It's crazy.
Yeah.
So Juan Soto in the same lineup as Shohei Ohtani, Freddie Freeman, and Mookie Betts. Soto gets to choose that option versus playing in the Yankees lineup with Aaron Judge and Giancarlo Stanton and those guys. It's a great situation to be in for Soto. If you're the Dodgers, I would not rule them out of anything.
Is it good for baseball that you got unanimous MVPs with the two highest spending teams?
I don't like that, no. I don't like the fact that free agency will underscore just how far apart everyone is from the Dodgers and the Yankees and maybe to a lesser degree the Mets and the big spenders and the teams that are in the Soto sweepstakes and the teams that were in the Ohtani sweepstakes. There's a group of five or so, the group of five, and then there's everybody else.
Yeah, it's true. It's very true. It's funny because we come off a World Series where, you get a team in there that no one saw coming and the Rangers win it and they had spent money. But now last year happens and it's like it feels like the game is completely different than it felt a year earlier.
Yeah, although I have to say that we all kind of enjoyed the Dodgers-Yankees element of October.
Yep.
That was nostalgic to a certain degree and just because a team that you picked to win didn't win doesn't diminish that at all. But it is a case of, in baseball, very much the last 2 years, you get what you pay for, and there are haves and have-nots.
I love this text. What's amazing to me is baseball ended 3 weeks ago, and it takes this long to announce their season awards. Way to capitalize on that World Series.
It is kind of silly.
It's ridiculous.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And it's also,
but we're talking about it.
We're talking about it, but they stagger it and they put it on an awkward time. It just doesn't make much sense.
I know.
You're choosing last night between the MLB awards and Thursday night football. College football was on the four-letter network, and I was at a hockey game, so I can't tell you what Aaron Judge said about being the MVP. I don't know.
I didn't feel like it was much of a choice. I just was going to watch football in football season. It never occurred to me to tune into the MLB awards. I was in front of the football game, and I had whatever it's called, X, Twitter, Blue Sky. I don't even know the names of these things anymore. I had that going so I could see on social media what was happening.
I would like to see them do something to stoke the off season so it makes it start faster. Like right now, between the end of Thanksgiving, let's say, and Christmas. I'd like to see baseball structure something so there's an incentive to either make trades or sign free agents in that time frame.
Well, there's big news tonight. This is the DFA night, right? This is where teams have to non-tender. There's the non-tender deadline. So if you're going to arbitration with someone, or you need to figure it out.
In Cubdom, known as Kyle Schwarber night.
All right, we've got the pick six next. We'll get to that. It's Molly and Hall on the Score.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Four.
It's Pick Six with Molly and Haw, where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Molly Haw. Pick Six with Molly and Haw starts now.
Did you enjoy hearing Bears OC on his message to the players after a loss to the Packers despite improvement from the offense?
There are no attaboys in this game. We played a game to win, and we came up short.
Did you like that from the Bears OC?
Yeah, that's the exactly correct attitude, and he's absolutely right. There are no attaboys in professional football, and they did come up short, and we know that. And the fact that it's now four games in a row should have everyone very, very nervous, because I know the Bears have never fired a coach in season, but you get another loss like that, you get another kind of moment where you're winning and you manage to lose and you walk away feeling like you blew the game. I don't know how much longer they can put up with it. I'm just saying, from a fan perspective, everyone's out of their minds. I think at some point, it's not going to matter what was done in previous years. This is a totally different NFL now than it was when the Bears were dominating in the 1940s. So, good reminder and a nice shot across the bow to the entire team that, yeah, you played better, but 19 points isn't going to get it done.
Great point. 19 points are not going to get it done. There are no attaboys. I agree wholeheartedly.
Everything you hear from Thomas Brown you like so far. He lost the game, but he didn't sound like he was defeated. He projects an air of confidence and belief and energy and enthusiasm. This is what the way you want your football coaches to sound. This is the impact you want them to make. I have to say, though, the more impressive he sounds on a weekly basis, the more indicting it becomes for the entire Bear organization. And I say that because as we sit along and nod our heads when he speaks, all that you can do after he's done talking is wonder, how in the world did he sit across from Ryan Poles and Matt Eberflus and not impress them enough to get a second interview for the offensive coordinator job last offseason? If he was one of the nine guys who interviewed for the job of play caller and Shane Waldron got the job over him, what were they hearing? And how much do you doubt that judgment? The better he looks, the worse they do. I know that's a backward way of looking at it, maybe, because he's a guy that you can understand why people around the league have hired him. Why people around the league may view him as a future head coach. He's going to be a head coach if he keeps talking like that and calling plays like he did and making progress and making impact. But it's great for the Bears now. I hope that they build on that offensive production last week. But why did they not hire him when they hired Shane Waldron instead of him?
Probably a better question for the league.
Special teams coordinator Richard Hightower took all responsibility for the blocked field goal attempt.
Obviously, extremely disappointed with the way the game ended. First and foremost, extremely disappointed for our players. But I'm also disappointed for support staff, our entire organization, and for the city of Chicago. As I always tell you all, for any success or any failure of any field goal, it starts with the protection, the operation, and the execution. And when those things are right, you have a successful field goal. When those things are wrong, your field goal isn't what you want it to be. And that starts and ends with me. And that was not the desired result that we wanted on that play.
Your reaction to what you just heard there from special teams coach Richard Hightower?
Well, that's what leadership sounds like, looks like, feels like. That's a football coach who's very football coachy, but that's the exact response you want to a crisis that he says is of his own making or he's responsible for. I don't think that it's entirely accurate or fair to hold him responsible for all those things, but that is exactly the way you want to sound. That is exactly what Matt Eberflus should have said. And again, when you talk about the biggest takeaways, when we hear these gifted speakers project on a Thursday, and it makes you wonder certain things. I wonder if Richard Hightower, when you hear him speak like a leader of men yesterday, as well as he did, as eloquent as he sounded, if it removes some of the questions about who would be interim head coach if they fired Matt Eberflus in the midst of the season. I think you could trust that guy with a lot. And I think yesterday you heard why.
Great point, David. Great point. It's been a theme of mine this week, not being thrilled with what I heard out of Halas Hall up at the podium. And again, at the end of the day on Sunday, it's show me, don't tell me. That's all that's going to matter. Show me, don't tell me. But we've talked about it ad nauseum, and I get why we're talking about it. But if the Bears were to make a move, I think we've just heard two clips back to back of guys that you could trust at least moving forward to carry the Bears to the finish line of this disappointing season.
It's a disappointing season. There's no shadow of a doubt about that. And, you know, there's a couple of examples of coaches who are standing up and saying the right thing after a loss. Now they're doing it on Wednesday. And I just want, or I guess Thursday it was, which is insane. So, you know, here we are. We talked about this a little bit yesterday. We're still talking about the missed field goal on Friday morning as you get ready for the weekend. Why is that? Well, the NFL says you only have to have your guys. The league says you have to have them show up once a week. But I think the Bears ought to know that the Bears should have rolled Richard Hightower out Sunday after the game or Monday morning and tried to get this story put behind them. Okay? They failed to do that. You know, there are unsatisfactory answers out there about why you didn't get the ball onto the hash mark that the guy likes, why you didn't continue to move the ball. I mean, it's great that he took responsibility for what went wrong. But there, you know, you could have used that earlier in the week for sure. But there still are some questions out there that just were not answered. And I think that that leaves the subject open to a lot of speculation.
And that's the big question, right?
That's the voice of Brad Biggs, 7 a.m. Biggs time with Mully and Haw. Is Vikings wide receiver Justin Jefferson the most dangerous offensive player the Bears will face this year? If not, then who and what's the general plan to contain him?
That's a good question. I think that Justin Jefferson is a very dangerous offensive player. The problem for him and for all players of his ilk is that he can't control when the ball gets to him, where it gets to him, etc. So I think that, you know, if you played Mahomes, that's more dangerous than Justin Jefferson because he's the trigger man in an attack. And the Bears, they don't play a ton of great quarterbacks this year. I think that the, you know, Jared Goff is playing as well as anyone. But it's not like, you know, Josh Allen's having a great year. You don't have to face him. You don't. You've gotten listen, we know how tough the schedule is, and we know that the Bears have division opponents that are very good. But in terms of the most dangerous offensive player in the league, I would say that you could make a strong argument that Justin Jefferson is one of the best receivers in the league and offers like an incredible skill set that can really mess you up. And if not kept in check, this guy can ruin a game. But I think the Bears, with Jalen Johnson in the mix, and I know the guy fell down last week, but I think that, that he's a pretty damn good corner. And I would use him as much on Jefferson as I could.
Well, he should follow him around, in my opinion. There should be that should just be a thing. None of this, like, he plays. Jalen just plays on that half of the field. He can't go beyond that hash mark. Save it. Okay, Jalen prefers to be over here. He follows him around. We've heard Jalen talking about wanting to, you know, go up against the guy. The guy gives you juice. But here's the issue for the Bears is that each and every week, guys keep getting better. Like, Sunday, there's no doubt that Justin Jefferson is the best offensive player on the Soldier Field turf. But guess what? Last week on the Soldier Field turf, Josh Jacobs was the best offensive player, the most dangerous player, and they got to face him again this year. Guess who else they have to face? Two more times this year. A guy they're going to face a week from yesterday. Okay, St. Brown. He's really good. He's one of those top guys in just in the NFC.
But he's a different threat.
Sure,
than,
but I'm saying
Jefferson.
My point is, yeah. Mully, each week, the problem is each and every week when the Bears take the field, they're always going against a better guy on offense than what the Bears have on offense. Even as good as our guy DJ Moore is, these guys that they're facing week in and week out are better. They have a fresh Christian McCaffrey still to play against before this season's over. He will be the best offensive player on the field that day. The problem is, as much as we've talked about the offensive weapons that Ryan Poles has gathered to put around Caleb Williams, week in and week out, the Bears don't have the best guy on the field on offense, and that's why they're at where they're at.
If McCaffrey were healthy when he plays the Bears, he probably can control the game at the running back position more than a wide receiver can at that position. So that may be the asterisk to this question. He might be the best offensive player remaining. Justin Jefferson is certainly in the top two, three, or four. Around the league, the most dangerous guy to face, I think, could be Tyreek Hill just because of the speed element. Not that you could choose one over the other. One might be one, the other one might be 1A. Justin Jefferson certainly makes circus catches, and his catch radius makes him as dangerous as any receiver in the league. Guy, you know, I'd rather have him than Jamar Chase. I'd rather have him almost than anybody, except for maybe Tyreek Hill, given the matchups. But that's kind of a different type of debate. You know, as far as what the Bears do with, I understand why they don't travel Jalen Johnson back and forth. I get that the philosophy And in theory, they should be able to absorb that. But I wouldn't. I would probably change my rules for this Sunday just because of the desperation mode that they're in this season. So I think they have to have a good, sound game plan. I would shake things up. I would try to confuse Sam Darnold and take your chances, because if not, Justin Jefferson will make you regret not adjusting to his rare talent, because he is going to be the best offensive player on the field Sunday.
Oh, my God, what a question. What a question.
Pencil paper time around 7:42 with Joe Fortenbaugh. What did you think of Ken Rosenthal reporting in The Athletic that rival execs are saying the Cubs want to trade Cody Bellinger? What's the motivation? Is that a good or a bad idea?
I don't think it's a good idea. I'm not in favor of trading Cody Bellinger. I think that you don't get better by trading away one of your best players. And it doesn't make the Cubs any different if you keep him. I understand. Find somebody else to deal. I think the motivation might be the fact that he is more movable because of the contract and because of maybe the language in the contract that doesn't permit him to oppose a trade. Maybe that Scott Boras is whispering to Jed Hoyer and Carter Hawkins that they wanted a trade. I don't know what the situation is. I know that Seiya Suzuki and Ian Happ have language in their deals that prevent them from being traded. They have a no-trade clause. So maybe that's the source of some of this conversation and speculation. But I don't like any of it. Cody Bellinger should be a complement to another star, not as somebody who you miss because he's gone. He's probably going to have a bounce-back year next season. He would have had a decent year this year, I believe, except for he ran into a wall and got hit by a pitch. That doesn't tell me he's injury-prone. That tells me he had bad luck. So found this very interesting that rival execs are talking about the Cubs dealing Bellinger. I would think you want to belly up to the bar in Chicago again.
This actually does make sense to me, and I wonder if Ken does this article with a bow tie on. Does he type this up with his bow tie? Kenny. Well, guys, because you're going to get rid of the money, and one of the trades they're talking about is getting two of the top 12 prospects from the Mets. Okay, so you move him to the Mets. The Cubs get back two of the Mets' top 12 prospects, a fielder and a pitcher. And then if Cody Bellinger goes to the Mets, who all of a sudden might be available from the Mets also? Not via trade, but via free agency.
And what if he signs back with the Mets?
Well, but what if, David? I'm just saying this is why it could make sense. It frees up $80 million guaranteed dollars to Cody Bellinger to spend elsewhere. Now, as long as they spend it, here my problem is, don't send Cody Bellinger off and maybe you got to pay 20 of the 80, 25 of the 80.
Why don't you get Alonso and Bellinger? You want more prospects? For what? So they can brag about how many prospects they have?
I would say that it makes sense to me that they're thinking about trading Cody Bellinger. I would imagine that somewhere in the dark recesses, they didn't think he was going to opt in, and they may have mentally done some of the gymnastics. What if that doesn't happen? And now that he's there, now that he's back, it creates a whole new series of problems, such as, you know, where are you going to play your right fielder? Because Bellinger is going to remain as a starting outfielder, and you feel good that you got a center fielder in Pete Crow Armstrong. So, you know, are you going to use the guy as a DH? No, you'll use him as an outfielder. You're not going to use him as a first baseman. And so how do you get better? Well, you got to get more money in order to spend. And this is, you got a couple of corner outfielders that have no trade clauses. This is a movable piece. It's not ideal. I think there's a reason that you went out and got him, and he certainly had a really good first year here. But he took a step back a little bit last year, and Dustin's right. Maybe you need power more than you need a guy with some really good defensive ability and a nice bit of power, but not as a necessarily a premium. I don't know. I mean, they got to do something. We talk about who they're going to move and how they're going to clear some spots. Kind of makes sense to me. Not saying I'm in love with it. Just saying, when you look at their team, it almost makes sense.
Yes. Hey, well, here's another question.
Grody time, answering questions with Mully and Haw, 8:25 this morning. Okay, a couple predictions coming your way. Prediction time number one. Even without Patrick Williams and Lonzo Ball, do you believe the Bulls will finally win their first NBA Cup game against the Hawks from Atlanta on the red court of the UC? Are they overdue? 0-5 so far since the inception of this NBA Cup.
Well, I know David doesn't really care about the NBA Cup, which is why I wanted to mention the NBA Cup a couple times. I think it's funny. But I do think that they need to beat the Hawks. I think that's one of the teams. I'm just saying, looking around, I know everybody wants them to start losing games, etc. I'm not on board with that. That'll all come naturally when they make whatever move that is out there before the season is over. But I think looking at their team right now, they should win this game. And the fact that it's in the NBA Cup just means that your eyes are going to hurt watching television because the floor is going to really be like a screaming red. But yeah, this is just more about a time in the season where you'd like to see them rally and win. And I think they can get away without Patrick Williams and Lonzo Ball in this game. I'd like to see them have a good performance.
I think it all depends on, can they score? I think they'd have to score probably 130 tonight to win. They're going to live and die by the three-pointer. That's what they're going to do all year long. I did tell you guys the other night, Tuesday night, I got hooked into the NBA Cup and I watched the Celtics on that green court. And at first I thought, and then I thought, boy, this is big time. It's different. It's scream big time to me. So I hope that I get that tonight. I'm not going to say that I am. I don't have a whole lot of plans tonight, so maybe I'll get drawn into the red United Center court.
Yeah, all I'm going to get is a headache watching the red court. The Bulls are going to beat the Hawks. Lonzo Ball is not somebody I even consider part of the plan. So he's a bonus. He's like, anything you get from him this season feels like it will be an extra. We kind of got teased into what he's capable of the first couple games, and then he disappears again. It's tough. He's got bad injury luck, and I just don't think that they are in a position to say, you know, without Lonzo Ball, I'm not sure what they're like with him. I kind of forget now. But Patrick Williams is a bigger issue and one that I think has more big picture, long-term implications than short picture, short-term implications, because Torrey Craig is a pretty capable replacement. He might even be an upgrade in some games because of how many different boxes he checks. And he'll play tonight, and I think they'll beat the Hawks tonight. They're at home, and Zach will probably fill it up for 15 points in the fourth quarter, and Dustin will be deciding between whether or not he can feel good about watching a game on that red floor and feeling good about a game that Zach LaVine played like an all-star. Can you still cheer for those games, Dustin, even though you don't like Zach LaVine? Did you see that story about Vince Goodwill? Quick aside.
Yes.
Zach boxed over the summer to get tougher, to get in shape, to train that way. Lot of respect for this guy. Growing respect for Zach LaVine. I think Zach LaVine has a big fourth quarter tonight, and Zach leads the Bulls over the Hawks.
No shot.
The last question will be
prediction time number two. Would you bet a dose of David Haw's money on Indiana covering the nearly 2-touchdown deficit in a point spread at Ohio State on Saturday? Can the Hoosiers actually win the game straight up? Is it possible they could be beaten badly enough to lose a spot in the 12-team playoff? How much of a deficit would it take?
Okay, I feel targeted here a little bit. I feel targeted here. If the Hoosiers beat Ohio State straight up, David Haw's money will be buying breakfast Monday. Okay.
Wow. Here we
they
go.
That will be.
Go Indiana.
Go Hoosiers. That will be the upset of the weekend. I don't expect it to happen. It would be great if it did. You talk about something great for a sport. If Indiana beats Ohio State to remain unbeaten and move up from where they are right now in the polls, that's a tremendous accomplishment. I think it's still going to be a 2-touchdown loss. It's probably going to be something like 35-21, 38-23, something like that. I just feel like they're not ready yet. But they have put themselves in a position where on November 22nd, we're still talking about Indiana football. That's good for the Big Ten. The expansion of the Big Ten, I didn't think in this season where the conference is bigger than ever, that we'd be talking about Indiana being the team that has the coach of the year in the conference. So they got to keep it within two touchdowns for people not to think that they don't belong in the 12-team playoff.
So according to Circus Sports Illinois, Ohio State is a 10-point favorite on Saturday. Seems a little low to me. I have heard people say that, you know, Ohio State's not the type of team that goes out and blows teams out. They're going to play complimentary football. They're going to grind you down. You'd have to possibly worry about a backdoor cover. For me, I mean, listen, if I'm going to get a free breakfast on it, then go Hoosiers. I'm all for, I mean, I don't like Ohio State. I don't like their coach. I don't like his dyed beard. There's a lot not to like about Ohio State. If Indiana is the fifth best school in college football, this is a bad year of college football. Sorry.
That is so wrong.
Yes, it is, David. It's not wrong, it's correct. We're all entitled to our opinions. That's what the point of this segment is.
I hope you choke on your breakfast when David buys
it. Well, that's for a whole other reason.
That's bad for college football?
I mean, just to match what David has said, I will buy breakfast on Monday if Army beats Notre Dame. How about that? That way all of our Notre Dame fans can at least know they're getting a free breakfast.
What if Army and Indiana win?
Oh, my God.
Well, I won't be here.
I want to talk about this for a second, though, because, first of all, yes, I would bet David's money on anything. As long as it's not my money, I'll take any wager and I'll go at it. And you'd be stunned at what a big spender I could be if I'm on someone else's coin. But I would say this. That, okay, I get it. Ohio State is a different caliber opponent than Indiana. They haven't played anyone like Ohio State, and Ohio State has played some good teams. Ohio State and Indiana, though, have two common opponents, right? Both teams played Michigan State, and both teams played Nebraska. And you would have to say that Indiana beat those teams as well or maybe better than Ohio State did. This is a really big game, and it's Ohio State at home, and they're in the horseshoe, and the Buckeyes are, a great team, and they would have beaten Oregon if that game was at Ohio State. And so I think that the problem you have here is that Ohio State is at a point in the year where they're really functioning at a high level, and they played a good game recently, and they're capable of really doing well. But I think when you look at the common opponents, this could be a decent football game. I think the guy's a really good coach. I don't think he's going to have his team feeling overwhelmed. They may get overwhelmed, and it may end up being too big a moment just because of the quality of the opponent. And again, when you're a good team and you're playing well, it's hard not to be good. And I think that the fact that they're rated fifth in the country – and the fact that all of the things that are at stake, Ohio State wants another bite at the apple against Oregon. So I think Ohio State's going to win the football game. But I think Indiana can play this game better than people expect. And I do think the backdoor cover is in play. So we'll find out more from Joe Fortenbaugh. But I mean, I get it. I understand all that is at stake. And I think that at the end of the day, I think Indiana's going to make that Final 12.
I think they will too.
Yeah.
And if they upset Ohio State in the horseshoe, there will be one person in America that thinks that's bad for college football.
Dustin?
Yeah.
Okay.
That wasn't what I said, David.
What did you say?
Did I say if they beat Ohio State? I said if. If they're the fifth best team in the country, this is a bad brand of college football. That's what I said.
I thought you said it was bad for college football.
No, I said it's a bad brand of college football. It's not bad for college football. It just means that college football is down. It means that it's not as good as it used to be.
Nothing is.
Well, that's probably something we could agree on.
if Army beats Notre Dame, you get free breakfast. But does that mean that the Army coach should be hired by the Bears to be the next head coach?
Well, that's, you'd have to ask David that, not me. I didn't put that question. I don't submit the questions. I just decide which ones we ask. And that was actually a real, you know why that was a good question? Because it generated a ton of conversation.
What did I do to get picked on today?
I'm not picking on you.
How are you picked on? I offer you a free breakfast if
we're getting breakfast on Tuesday, by the way, if you check your email.
Oh, my God. I'll buy you a free breakfast on Tuesday.
All right, let's get
we got the extra point next. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
Set up this extra point.
It's time for the Extra Point with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Will the Bears finally break out of their four-game losing streak and get a division victory over the visiting Vikings on Sunday? Can you please share a projected score if you believe the Bears will win? Will it be pronounced or another blown fourth-quarter lead?
Well, the Bears really need to win a game that they're not expected to win. They need to be a team that finally does something we don't expect them to do. It would be great if they could show us they understand how to win a game, because we have seen too many examples of them understanding how to lose them. This is a team that finds ways to lose. This is a team that doesn't have any credibility accrued. This is a team that's kind of lost credibility and the plot. They're 4-6. They should be 6-4 at least. They've had two catastrophic endings on walk-off losses that are more than just losses. It's more than just a loss of a football game. It's a loss of confidence. It's a loss of morale. It's a loss of momentum. All of the things. And I just don't see how they go out there on Sunday and do everything I just thought that described they haven't done. I don't know what's different about this week. It certainly doesn't sound any different from the top. Matt Eberflus sounds run down. He sounds as worn out as you feel watching this team. They are exhausting. They are excruciating. They are not exciting. Vikings 24, Bears 23, another one-loss defeat.
That'll be an exciting game, David. 24-23
score defeat.
That would be an exciting game. One that I would enjoy watching. It sounds like till the bitter end.
You're not going to enjoy it if it's 1 point loss.
Sure, I am. I've said the Bears aren't going to win another game this season, and I'm sticking to that. Oh. They're not going to, and the Vikings are going to win 20-17.
I'm really struggling with this because I really feel like. I really feel like kind of going Mike Florio on it, backing up our guy Marshall Harris. But I don't think that's the way to bet it. And I don't want anybody losing any of their money on my pick. But I'm going to have to go with the Vikings. I'll say that they win the game 23-20. So they'll win by a field goal. I don't think it'll be a last-second field goal.
Well, that's at least won't be as.
I think they'll win the game.
Awful.
No,
don't you think Florio picked the Vikings largely because, or picked the Bears largely because he's a Viking fan?
I think he's onto something, and I like that Marshall Harris. I feel like here's the thing, like the Bears are rotting on the vine; they're so overdue. It's just crazy that they've managed to lose as many games as they have in the way they've lost them, and basically. I'm of the belief that there's no way they're going to lose out, Dustin. It's hard to lose that many games in the NFL. NFL is a weird league. They got the offensive line getting back a little bit. I get it. I know what the problems are with the Vikings, believe me. But the Bears do too. It's a familiar opponent. So I think they'll be in the game. I just don't know that they have enough magic to pull it out.
They have no magic.
Well, that's what I mean.
They have the only magic they have is they can make leads disappear, their own.
But to me, I think that the Detroit game's a tough one. So now what we're doing here, and why I was hesitating, is because we're picking a 6-game losing streak, and I just it's hard to be that bad.
But bad teams are unable to interrupt streaks in the way that good teams.
That's why I'm making the selection I made.
It's tough.
I really want to pick the Vikings, and I would think the Bears would have a chance to cover were the spread a little different. But I got them kind of with a push, I guess, by going with three. But I can't pick the Vikings.
They just too often find ways to lose.
I can't pick against the Vikings. No, the Bears are not a team worth backing right now. All right. 312-644-6767. Anyone think they're going to win? Anyone think just the odds are strange and life is weird and they'll somehow find a way to win? Anybody? Mully and Haw on the Score.
Are you personally frustrated?
I mean, we on a, 3-4-game losing streak? I'm pretty frustrated. So, yeah.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. I don't know if you can tell how frustrated he is, but he used a word that wouldn't have made it through the Bears' cleaning of Hard Knocks.
Right, but a word that you definitely are going to get quoted on if you say it in front of microphones.
Yeah.
People love profanity.
Pretty blanking, yeah. Frustrated.
That'll get you quoted.
That's Montez Sweat. And he's not doing...
Get to the quarterback.
He's not too happy. Yeah. He's got 3.5.
Get to the quarterback.
3.5 sacks this year. Back off. Yeah.
He's not on the injury list, right?
No.
You scoured that, right?
I do scour it.
And he wasn't on there, was he?
He was not on it for the first
time.
Welcome
to Chicago. It was a great honeymoon. Lasted a year. Like, calendar year. Get to the quarterback. You're not in Washington. You're not overshadowed by other... defensive linemen. You're not on a good team, but you're not in a good defensive line. You're going to get the attention. That's why they signed you to a $98 million contract. It's time to get to the quarterback.
We got a lot of people want to check in, and it's fun because there are a lot of positive moments here, and we've been pretty negative about the Bears' chances in this game. So we'll start with Jim. Jim's in Northbrook. Hey, Jim.
Yeah, guys, let's get positive. I know a guy that'll take the other side of this four-teamer, and I think if we put $100 on it, we're going to be able to buy our favorite, country club golf course. So, and I'll buy breakfast for all three of you if this hits.
You got to include Brandon. What are you doing?
Yeah, Brandon's in. Okay. Brandon, you guys are the titans of morning radio.
That makes
you guys
of
are
us.
All in.
Okay, I'm sorry.
straight up money line, Army. Indiana, the Bears, and tomorrow afternoon in Naperville, the York Dukes
take down
the Naperville Central Redhawks. That four-teamer, $100 will pay minus $30,000. I mean, we might be able to retire, guys.
Can you actually put that kind
Thanks,
of dough
Jim.
On a high school?
I don't
Is
think
that
so.
Allowed?
I don't think
Not
so.
Not in Illinois.
Corrupt those young men.
We'll have to go to the spring back or whatever, the spring out or spring.
Spring in.
Spring in.
It's the spring in.
Yeah, I know.
That's where Dustin will be tonight.
That's where he watches.
I don't know if I'll be there tonight.
Okay.
No, he's going
but I will
tomorrow
be there.
For
you,
the game.
Most Fridays you find me there, but Saturday night I will spring in and stumble out.
Army, IU, Bears, and York. How many of those four teams will win this weekend?
Army, IU, Bears, York. Two.
I think one.
York?
Yeah.
See, I'm counting York.
I just
one other one.
I just don't think the others
gonna be one,
have it in them.
One of them's gonna.
Even though it would be a better story for all involved, except for maybe Notre Dame fans, if Monday we come in talking about the Hoosiers upsetting the Buckeyes in your beloved horseshoe, if we're talking about the Bears holding on against the Vikings with a one score victory, and then York will keep Dustin happy.
We won't be calling it a horseshoe loss, just so you know.
Okay, Montez.
We'll rename that thing.
Well, I'll quote you then because
we'll be thrown into.
You want to get quoted on Sports Talk Radio in any city? Cuss.
Yeah, I don't know. Not on Hard Knocks.
Okay,
that's why he was apparently not featured much on Hard Knocks.
Yeah.
Raul is listening on the Odyssey app. Hey, Raul.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. Can you guys hear me?
We can hear you, buddy.
Alrighty, sounds good. Originally I said we were gonna win out, but I think we're gonna lose one more game. We're gonna go on a nice run here. The offense is back. The defense is gonna start clicking, and we're gonna make the playoffs at 10-7.
Bear down.
Thanks, Raul.
Okay, Raul, now you're delirious.
We got to get to Biggs time.
You know, now that's a feverish kind of response. Biggs time next. We'll find out who he picks. Mully and Haw on the score.
Oh,
yeah, hey. All right, he got to go.